Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good yawning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 20th of September, 2022, and you are on the clock with Erin Green on this World News Tuesday with Mark Palmer. Good morning, Mr. Palmer.
Good morning, Erin. How you do?
I am good, thank you. You know, we started off the show with Hurricane is Coming by Phil Stubbs. We need a, you know, there's a daily prayer book like this. Mm-hmm. They produce a year's worth of prayers. Every day there's a specific prayer. We have enough Bahamian songs to have a daily song book. There's a song in out there for every situation, every feeling, every conflict, every problem you having. There's a song for it out there. And I'm sure Phil Stubbs have about 3/4 of that book himself. And we're not mad at him at all. Morning, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm recovering after the yesterday.
What happened yesterday?
Well, you know, there was this small matter of a funeral, right?
Well, I mean, it could still be alcohol-related. I thought it was an alcohol-related event.
Well, my poor wife, she gets up at 5 or 4:30 a.m. She watched every minute of it, and she loves all that protocol. So she thought it was really well done. Mm-hmm. You know, they're good. The British are good at doing funerals and coronations, for sure.
They're good at protocols. Yeah. They're good at queuing. They're so good at queuing up, like they had to put 3 or 4 extra letters in there so you could see how substantive it is.
It's like a bit like Christmas, you know, after you open your presents. It's like a damp squib, right? So you watch it, and then when they leave, the final people leave, it's like, what now? You know, it's almost like a...
What's next?
Yeah.
Yeah, how do we pull together the pieces of our lives? I imagine people like protocol, like I used to watch Law and Order forever. I mean, I just watch all of it, all iterations. The first one, original, SVU, Criminal Intent, I think was my favorite. And, you know, I watched it. And I realized I was watching a whole lot of police-based shows. And I realized that the world, Western world, was inundated with police justice-style shows, you know. And then I realized two things. It's like they're trying to soften our hearts towards the police. Realize that they're real humans just like you, and they have real problems just like you, and the babysitter doesn't show up, and they think someone's sleeping with their, right? But at the same time, I realize that we crave these shows, particularly in this region, this jurisdiction called the Bahamas. We crave these shows because we crave law and order. In some aspect of our lives, we want something, you know, to end with justice and with balance. We crave it desperately, and that's why I think many of us were drawn to those shows, because every day, no matter what you experience in the rest of the world, like every day, you get a little dose, a little iota of law. Something is right with the world. Something was resolved. Somebody did their job and realized what had to be done. And maybe that's why so many people loved not just watching the event, made it an integral part of their life, right? This is a moment.
Like a closure, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, that protocol and things being done correctly. Like I can say, somebody remarked this morning in the social medias, you know, thousands and thousands of soldiers and not one green pair of Crocs anywhere. And that gives you a sense of why there's a longing, you know, for the vision of what we could be at our best under the system. And then, you know, the realization that you will always be a developing nation. You'll never achieve what the developed nation has achieved. That's the slide that we're on. Mm. You know, the higher they climb, the more we have to attain to reach them.
But, you know, also is perfection. Can you ever reach perfection?
I mean,
you know.
No, you could never be a mango. Neither could I, Mark. That is perfection. That is it. That is all there is.
Yeah.
A lemon meringue mango, a Bombay mango. These are the two best I had this season. I had them early in the year. I want to say good morning and thank you to Mr. Knowles. You know who you are. And then my mango season was over.
It was over quick this year, right?
Yeah. But no, there were lots of mangoes. But I had the best mangoes for the season, very early in the season. Mm. And as soon as I tasted them, I got a sense that this was it. It wasn't going to get any better than this. So I moderated my expectations greatly and trudged through the rest of the mango season.
Well, I have my third set of avocados coming out of my trees now. And these, I'm not quite sure what these ones are. These are like the Hass ones, but like three times as big, but got a very thick skin. I don't know if you're familiar with them. So when they drop, they fine, you know?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and they're all delicious. Yeah, so I'm just waiting for them to drop now.
Look at this guy. I mean, you could say they're all delicious, but until I sample one.
I will bring you one.
I'm about to say, what? That's like a threat almost. What type of law and order is this, Mr. Palmer? Yeah.
But you know, I have some very good news. I don't know if you watched the TV on the weekend, but the President of the United States said three important words. I don't know if you're aware of them. The pandemic is over. That's four words, actually.
Hold on. My Uncle Joe Biden?
He said that on, I think it was 60 Minutes. So I'm now waiting for the mask mandates to be dropped, the mandating, the travel restrictions.
Well, you know they're 8 hours ahead of time in London, right? What, 6 hours ahead of time in London. And apparently not a soul wore a mask.
Mm-hmm.
They
already know it. They've known it's over for months now. But we need to catch up now. And so when I heard that gave me great joy because a lot of us already knew it had been over since pretty much December when Omicron came.
Which was the most contagious.
But least pathogenic.
Right.
Yeah, and everyone was going to get it ultimately. And so this is good news, right? I want to share that with all our listeners, you know, that we are getting closer and closer back to normal or new normal.
I mean...
Good news, eh?
It is good news, right? Without a doubt. People are clamoring for it.
Mm-hmm.
My greatest concern is that even states like, I think, Denmark that announced that they halted...
Under 50. No right. Vaccination under 50 now.
They're also saying that like it's still temporary on paper. As winter rolls in, that they may reinitiate their vaccine program.
Mm-hmm.
So my greatest concern is really what happens locally if we have transmission from the external transmission, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have a spike because of tourists. Winter is... the period they're most concerned about globally or in the global north at the very least, but that's also our peak winter season. And I'm not concerned about deaths, right? Like the concern that was laid upon us at the beginning of the pandemic. I'm just concerned for the state of the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
And can they contain any more than they have right now?
Yeah.
And then there's another thing. We got a big problem. It's like, you know, we have you talk about the queen, who's now the king of England, is actually the king of the Bahamas, right?
He's our head of state.
Right,
he's there's our only head of 15 state. Countries, I believe. They tend to, a lot of them are in the Caribbean, not the big ones. He's not head of state of Canada or New Zealand or any of the big boys, but a lot of the ones like St. Nevis, the Bahamas, I think Jamaica, he's the head of state. So it's only 15 countries.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're one of them.
Right. Mm. But the Prime Minister is going to have a big problem on his hands trying to balance this local mask mandate with international policy, right? Especially with tourism. because how are you going to create a state where residents have far more restrictions than foreigners?
Right. Right.
Right? And then attempt to justify it with, well, the healthcare system can't handle it, but make no real substantive moves to fix healthcare. Right?
Well, I think it's to do with our tourism industry, isn't it? And,
right.
And so we're looking to our neighbors in the north for guidance, and I think that's what's guided our public health policy over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And it has been, in some cases, discriminatory, true.
Yeah.
Let's hope it all gets better soon.
A word from Biden is a positive
word. That's a very positive
for
thing,
the Bahamas.
Yeah.
That's good. Another space I think the government is slightly derelict in is hurricane preparation this year.
I mean, the challenge, you look at it from an individual basis, families preparing them. So who's got money?
Yeah.
Who's got money to buy extra medication, extra water, extra, all those things? I mean, it's all very good, right?
Yeah.
The list that they give you. But I there were times in my life where I didn't have much cash, and it was like, what the hell? You know, I can't afford that.
Well,
it's a good idea. So there's a micro level and there's a macro level as well, which is where NEMA comes in.
Yeah, and we know Hurricane Fiona has sort of devastated Puerto Rico. Hit the, I think traveled across the entire island very slowly.
Yeah,
record rain
horrible,
and landslides. I think Puerto Rico has a large sector. About 30% of Puerto Rico is at high to extremely high risk for landslides and intense rainfall conditions.
Yeah.
And so that means that you have larger percentages that are at, you know, low to moderate risk of landslides. They lost power, I think, across the island. Dominican Republic took less, I think, of a hit. And Turks and Caicos is in it now, and I think coming out of it. And then maybe we hit the southern islands.
The southern Mayaguana.
Right, and we've seen a number of stories coming out of Mayaguana.
Well, I'm told the Bahamas Air went down and evacuated.
Yeah, so they had medical evacuations, and so they had two levels of evacuations. They had, I think, off-island evacuations.
Right.
And then they had, they were requesting people evacuate from their homes and move them to the shelter slash command center. Now, on that, I'm not quite certain, right, whether the shelter is also the command center. And I think that's a part of the critique, you know, that we lay on the table, that we just are behind, I don't know if behind eight ball is right, and we just slunk in. We're just not prepared. It's like we don't understand the extent to which we have to dig our heels in and get this done. And have it consistently. I haven't seen a list of shelters yet for the hurricane season. That may be my bad, you know. Maybe I'm not scouring the internet and all the spaces, but I shouldn't have to. Like, that's the point. Like, the point is that the average citizen or resident doesn't have the time to go looking for where this information is. We have agencies that are constructed and designed to disseminate this information, to make it readily available. And even then, like I did, you know, just doing a little research, looking at NEMA's page, you know, it says NEMA was established to provide aid in mitigation, preparedness, response, and phase one of recovery. If NEMA's only providing aid, then where the bulk of these services, where do they rest, right? Who is, who's really responsible? Like,
well, they do assist the, you know, the certainly for the Family Islands, they assist the local communities in preparation of their comprehensive disaster management plans. So that is, you know, they are doing that. And so I was good. I was pleased to see that the, you know, South, Central, North Eleuthera, they have plans in place. You know, they already have something, which I know wasn't the case years ago.
Wow.
You know, so those things are really encouraging, and I know the shelters are being, you know, they're assessing their shelters and,
I mean,
and doing all that. So that's good stuff.
Right, this is encouraging, but if you heard reports, I think from the Mayaguana Island administrator yesterday, I'm not sure if these plans are substantive enough, if they're thorough enough, right?
Probably,
one of the concerns was that, I mean, there was certainty that there weren't enough resources for, quote-unquote, battening down the hatches. And I don't know if those who are responsible sort of, I like to talk about duty of care a lot. Mm-hmm. Understand the duty of care involved in this, right? Hurricane preparation is not an individual solution issue. And for particularly our far-flung archipelago, right, it's not a community solution issue either, right? Mm-hmm. It requires multiple agencies engaging stakeholders. Mm-hmm. If plywood in New Providence is $100 a sheet, right, then how do we ensure that resources are available when necessary for residents of these islands? In fact, looking at the video, I wasn't even sure if the command center was going to be safe. I mean, if you look at what appeared to be the command center, sheets of plywood being nailed on to windows, and I'm just like, no.
Yeah.
This is, we live in a hurricane. This is our life, right? Driving Bentley and driving fan, that's not our life. Catching flights, not feelings, that's not our life. We live in a hurricane zone. Apparently you can't sue people for dereliction of duty or disregard for duty of care in the Bahamas. Not really. Like, technically, you have to go about it another way. I would be suing. I mean, it's time for some real substantive change. I get a text here, says, why did they evacuate people for tropical storm force winds and 3 inches of rain? Last week, they declared a hurricane warning when the system was 60 miles per hour and 4 days away. I'm concerned about the decision-making at NEMA. It's like they're panicking more than managing the situation with actual information. Well, at last, texted last I read, the storm had intensified to a category 3.
I think that's unfair. Yeah. Because I think if they hadn't done it and the trajectory had been slightly different, we'd be having a very different conversation. So I think I'm always for caution.
Right.
You know, in these situations.
And it's a consideration given the archipelagic nature.
Well, that's the biggest problems. You know, think of all those airports we have. You know, how many is it? I think, is it 27 or some incredible number of airports that we have to secure. We have, you know, just speaking from a Lutheran island, I know we have 3 areas, you know, north, central, and south. They all have to have an EOC. They have shelters. They have, you know, there's a lot of mitigation, you know, that needs to be done and strengthening, and, you know, make sure that every region has, or every district has, its supplies, its equipment, and that its volunteers are properly trained. That requires a lot of resources, and I'm not sure that really is something that has to come from the ground up, but needs to be funded.
Yeah.
You know, because people need to be trained, volunteers, first responders. That training needs to happen every year, you know, fire suppression, whatever it is. Just like CPR, you know, nurses undergo CPR training periodically so that they know, you know, what the skills are. But that's a huge amount of resources. I'm just looking at Luthra.
Yeah.
Just training alone, you know, to get somebody to do fire suppression training, how much that costs, you know, and then you're looking at all the clinics as well, and then the training that needs to be done there. It's a huge resource issue, and that's not really, I don't think NEMA has the money to do that, so you can't put the blame on NEMA for that, but that has to be resourced from a ground up level, you know, where you, and where NEMA comes in is they assist, you know, the administrators with their plans and with their resourcing and things like that, but civil society needs to then jump in and fill that gap and help.
Right, and I just need people to know that there's more gaps than anything else. Mm-hmm. You can't even call it a safety net, right? Can't even call it a net.
Of course, there are a lot of gaps.
And
you know, shelters need to be maintained.
Right, year-round.
Year-round, they need to have generators.
Yeah.
Things, simple things, but generators, 10 grand.
Right.
And then that needs to be maintained and fuel supplied for. It's a lot
right.
of money.
Right. And if we're shutting down schools because of a lack of access to water, right, then we have no business running shelters, because a school should never shut down, but never be faced with that issue. Mark, we got a couple of calls, we're going to transition to our guest. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Yes, sir. Good morning to all.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
I'm all right. You know, my question to you and your guest is, you know, why are we not building a multi government buildings, especially the schools, you know what I mean, large enough to hold the students of this nation, You know, they should be able to hold a community, I would think. You know, in every community, there should be a school, you know, that is fit in the hurricane zone. You know, why are we building these schools like village schools, you know, small town schools that are not fit for our region? You know what I'm saying? I feel like this is a step. I feel like our government's right there dealing with it. Odious debt, you know, that we are spending our money to benefit cronies just for contracts that you know what I'm saying, that they're spending our money, you know, that doesn't serve us our best. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Absolutely. I think a better allocation or, mm-hmm. you know, of resources is required.
Because schools already have cafeterias, right? So they could prepare food, they have, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, it's a great idea. I know a lot of schools are serve as disaster shelters as well as other buildings. But if that's planning, right? What your guest, the caller just called in, it's planning and assessing.
And a shift in culture, mm-hmm. a shift in thinking. You know, I realize, and I say this boldly, I imagine that the people who are responsible for planning sit down and think, well, mama don't care. Look at mama. She don't save no money. She ain't doing this. She ain't doing that. Mama's giving up. Mama has no control. Mama realizes she can't control no storm. And she, in all of her life, she can't control the government. She can't tell the government, do what you're obligated to do. She can't control none of that. So she just turned her head to the skies and pray to God that if the storm devastates, that it takes me quickly, right? That's the psychological state that many Bahamian citizens are in. But that doesn't justify a further loosening of responsibility from the state. It warrants ramping it up. When you see people who seem desperate and hopeless, that means you ramp up your response, government. You don't loosen it and say, well, if the people don't want better, so what I could do? Your job is to do what you know needs to be done. And I wanted to sort of have this conversation in the context of grading the government because it's been their 1-year anniversary. But we're not going to do that today.
You're going to grade each ministry.
Well,
that's how it works. So.
I'm going to invite people to grade each ministry. I'm going to try give a grade on each or how I'm assessing it. You know, the principles or criteria upon which I assess the grade. But invite people to give a grade. I can start that tomorrow because today, sort of short notice back and forth, but I've got Alicia Wallace joining us.
Oh, okay.
To discuss the recent consultation on the Sexual Offenses Amendment Act 2022. Alicia Wallace, I think, is on air. Good morning, Ms. Wallace.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks.
Good, good. First of all, I want to say thank you for joining me this morning. I know that you're going to be super busy over the next couple of weeks. I really wanted to sort of get this conversation in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Fiona, something about us women, when we won the stage, we could take the stage, buddy. So we had to talk about Fiona for a minute. And then, you know, the queen, she insists on continuing to be the center of our lives. We had to talk about her. moment. But I really am glad that you're here to join us today to discuss a couple of things. I want to ask you, after looking at the amendment, the bill, what has changed? Do you expect any further changes after the consultation with various stakeholders? Another question is, do you think all of the stakeholders who should be at the table were at the table? And then I want to talk about how the definition of consent has changed in the new bill.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Is there any one of those you want to talk about?
Okay.
And well, also, since you're the expert, you lead us.
Well, there are a number of changes proposed in this amendment bill. Some of them are very well aligned with what Equality Bahamas has been calling for in our Strike 5 campaign, where we have really been pushing to strike out those 5 words in the definition of rape who is not his spouse in Section 3. So that is done in the current amendment bill, which is quite different from the last one we saw. So that's a big improvement. We're also seeing the repeal of Section 15, which is on sexual assault by spouse, because that will no longer be necessary once we cover everyone under the definition of rape in Section 3.
Okay, pause right there. Section 15, is that the section that speaks specifically to couples who have begun the divorce proceedings or who have separated?
Yes, exactly.
And so that doesn't, that part doesn't pertain or relate to people in a marriage with no divorce proceedings or separation, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so we won't need that anymore since we'll be covering everyone with the definition of rape.
Okay, all right. So I understand.
Yeah, and now we are seeing the definition of consent, which we have been calling for pretty consistently, because before we were referring to a definition of consent that's in the penal code that is quite general. It's not specific to sexual violence, and we know that we really need to be clear about what consent is when we're talking about sex, mm-hmm. and understanding that where consent does not exist, it's not sex, then it's rape or some form of sexual violation. So we're really happy to see a definition of consent in there, and we're still looking at that definition and looking at how it would be used and how it compares to definitions used in other jurisdictions. But we did find out at the symposium that this definition came from, I guess, a review of two countries that we actually recommended that the government looked at. So Guyana and Canada, where they have really strong definitions of consent.
Okay.
Because
right.
I had a look at that definition, and see, I'm not a lawyer, but the language seemed to be very legalistic. And, it's quite detailed. Do you think it covers that area of consent well enough, or could it be misinterpreted in any way?
Yeah, we're still looking at it and the way that it would be interpreted, but generally speaking, it is very clear about what consent is, and just as importantly, if you look at the amendment bill a little bit further down, it gets into what consent is not, and that is okay. Really, really key. So understanding that mm-hmm. silence is not consent. Lack of, a physical fight back is not consent. Some indication of sexual arousal is not consent. And then there are certain things that are not defenses in the charge of any form of sexual violence. So these are really, really mm-hmm. important things. It's also noting that, if you got quote unquote consent by threatening someone, that's not consent. That's coercion. So it's really covering a lot of bases, which is quite critical, particularly when we're looking at something like this, where people come up with all kinds of different arguments, and we're not doing a good enough job of educating the general public about what consent is. So that's definitely going to have to come along with the passing of this bill or the passing of an updated bill. We need to have the understanding that just changing the law isn't enough. We still need to do public education.
And listen, let me tell you how very important that is, because I've heard people say, I've seen in social media conversations, this idea, the coconut trees, the coconut vendors, and people who are stealing coconuts, right? And I've heard people say, if you leave them on the tree, you must see, don't care if somebody come and get them, right? Like we really construe, we really are able to shape our argument, Oh, he didn't say, he watched me drive right. He watched me park right there, and he ain't say nothing. He ain't tell me, don't pick the coconut. So I picked the coconut, right? And submissions like that, people really justifying.
Well, he didn't really need it. I needed it more, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I was just borrowing it. Borrowing it, right?
And so this conversation mm-hmm. about consent and the changes in this specific legislation is necessary. The conversation is necessary, because just putting it down on paper isn't going to be sufficient. And looking at the wider cultural aspects, we realize that this lack of understanding or completely different understanding of what consent is entrenched in various aspects. We also see it in traffic. Right? You see people the way that they drive, you could see they're saying, well, you didn't stop me from coming out the corner so I could come out the corner, right? There was nothing stopping me from coming out the corner. Don't mind the stop sign. Don't mind that.
So you even see it in meetings, right? When people are trying to make decisions or posing questions, and if people don't answer fast enough, the sort of automatic thing that the facilitator or the leader says is, well, silence means consent. Well, no, maybe people are thinking. Mm-hmm. Maybe people are still processing the question or the information that's been provided. And it's really dangerous when we start to really move away from what these words really mean, mm-hmm. and almost give people license to ignore the true meaning of a word and what their actions look like versus what they ought to look like.
Yes.
So educating kids is really important. You know, mm-hmm. students is really important. The younger you get them to understand that definition, they won't be swung, right? By
most somebody. Definitely. And helping children to assert themselves and to know that they can give consent and they can withhold consent. So, mm-hmm. you know, not forcing children to hug uncle and sit on this person's lap, mm-hmm. but understanding that, you know, when you feel unsafe, you can say no to something and we will honor your no so that you learn that other people should do the same thing.
Right. And not forcing kids to share without interrogating why it is they don't want to share. Because in most instances, kids will share. There has to be a reason why a kid won't share. But we just tend to force them without interrogating. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there are real reasons, the same way there are real reasons. They don't want to sit on cousin's lap. You know, they don't want to get pinched by auntie so-and-so. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are real reasons. Ms. Wallace, I've got two calls on the line, and I had about four a minute ago. So if you don't mind, we go to the callers for a moment?
Sure.
All right. Good morning, caller. Mm-hmm. You're on the clock. Arlington, we missed that one. Let's go to the second caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Yes, good morning. How are you doing in your guest?
I'm good, thank you, sir. How are you?
I am a little confused because I plan to get married, right?
Yes.
But with all of this new concoction and stuff going on, I am seriously considering changing my mind, right?
Okay.
But maybe you can still help me.
Okay.
Because prior to marriage, mm-hmm. there is something called a counseling session.
Yes.
Right? That the couples have to go through. Now, the marriage vows, too. I want to know what your guests to do about them, because those vows prior to marriage says that to love for who in sickness, health, poorness, all of that good stuff. Mm-hmm. It basically encompasses everything, mm-hmm. right? And then we go to the church in the front of God and man, witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And then we agree that I with this woman, I take this woman, and you take this man. And then we sign what would be considered a contract
mm-hmm.
towards each other and our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So now, what are they going to do with the marriage vows after me and my spouse to sign that contract saying we want to do this, we want to do that, and we want you on the basic of our business, because this is consent between you and I, me and you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
what are they going to do with the marriage vow?
Getting married, like getting officially married in the Bahamas, is actually inviting the state into your marriage, right? Because you have to. You can't get like officially married without going through the state. You could have a ceremony with the church, right? Like you could have a church ceremony. But you actually, to be formally legally made in the Bahamas, you have to invite the church. Well, I mean, the state into your relationship. That's just what it is.
Well, Ms. Green, in order to register your marriage, you may have to invite the state. But after that, the state has no more purpose in there.
I mean, you think that is so, but actually, they remain a part of the relationship. Essentially, the same way in the service when you invite people. To come to your wedding in the church and you read the litany, especially the Anglican church.
Maybe you can help me.
There's a segment there for the community members. And I said to a friend, don't invite me to your wedding if you ain't serious, buddy. Because if you can make me come to this church and sit down and read this litany, read the thing that say that I vowed to uphold this marriage and I vow to protect it, right? And then you can come by me with your side piece.
Okay.
And then you can expect me to just cheers and careers? No.
How about Michael Pintard's response? I kind of looked into that, right? And I find something interesting there. That instead of adding a dagger to the marriage, that I could send my wife to jail if she come home feeling funny with it, she spanked me on my bottom. to get me aroused. Because that is what happens in relationships, marriages sometimes. One pull the other one into the bedroom and they get together, right? But I find it interesting, instead of adding a dagger to the marriage, why not counsel the spouses as to a quick way out if they're having problems or something of that sort? Why not introduce counseling? Encourage them.
Listen, I'd be the first person, you ask my male friends, I'd be the first person to tell them, hold on, first of all, before you get married, did you know, did you have the opportunity to ask that woman every single question that comes to your mind with witnesses present? Hold on. And my friends look at me like I'm crazy because they say, oh, Aaron, you gay. You don't know nothing about married and people, you know, being married to people. And I look at them and say, but I know about relationships. And I know about the fact that you have the right to not marry. Like, I ask these men all the time, did you know you have the right to not get married?
Yes, you do.
And you have the right to counseling and what you should do. And in fact, I tell people, for those that are so concerned about the degradation of the Christian institution of marriage, right? Because that's what we're sort of talking about, the Christian institution of marriage, which suggests that there are other institutions of marriage. We could put that to the side. But if Christians followed their own doctrine and spiritual practice, right? Like doctrine and tradition, because in the Anglican Church, it's the Bible, it's doctrine and tradition, right? If you followed all three of them, you wouldn't have these problems. The families would come together, people would sit down and talk, and you would make that young boy and that young girl look up into each other's face and have the conversation about the bounds of the marital bed in front of those people who you trust most to hold up your family. You'd have those conversations and then be able to determine as individuals and as a collective community whether this thing will work out.
See, Ms. Green, I don't have, sex violence on no level is accepted. I don't care whether you're married or you're single or whatever you is by yourself on the moon. That's not accepted, right? But now, my question to you and your guest is, there was a lady, there was a case that happened about 2-3 weeks ago where a lady went to court and she was given her divorce from her husband. Now, this building ain't in force yet,
right?
But she was able to get out of her marriage. How come?
You good?
Okay, let me answer that for you.
No, you said you missed it. All you said was how come?
Yeah, how come? The reason is because she, in the interest of time, she was able to get out of her marriage because of other circumstances. You had to call it rape. But she was able to get out.
What the judge said is that I cannot call it rape because legally that term doesn't exist. However, these acts constitute cruelty. And I can grant the divorce on the grounds of cruelty. That's what the judge said.
Exactly. So why not call it spousal cruelty, spousal something? That's because, like you're saying in there is a sanctity with marriage.
Okay.
We cannot throw away all of the principles and rules.
I appreciate your question, right? I want to answer it, and I want to let Ms. Wallace answer it, because I think we're going to have two different answers, right?
Okay, I want to say one more thing. If you could go that far, then we might as well, instead of using the word rape, we might as well just eliminate the word marriage and call it shocking up everybody. Thanks for taking the call.
Man, why you had to end it like that, caller? Listen, so, Ms. Wallace.
Yes.
That last question at the end there.
Yeah, there was so much before the last question that needs to be addressed, but I know we don't have time, but...
You go on. You address.
Basically, it doesn't matter who is doing it. It doesn't matter what the relationship is. When we start giving things different names, we suggest that certain people deserve and do not deserve access to justice because of relationships, because of decisions that were made that do not involve consent. And that is a very, very dangerous thing. And people are arguing about the sanctity of marriage, but where is the sanctity of marriage where there's violence?
Mm-hmm.
The sanctity of marriage is already gone.
Mm-hmm.
When you violated someone in any way, really, with physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, financial abuse, there is no sanctity there. So we need to just give that up. Mm-hmm. But it's quite troubling that so many people feel that marriage is threatened, or that maybe they don't want to get married because they would be held accountable and because the law will apply to them. That's very troubling. And at the beginning, the caller said that, you know, maybe he doesn't want to get married anymore. And I would suggest that this is the way that you're thinking. We shouldn't get married. Don't do it. Don't subject anyone to that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for that response. I think I was going to be a little spottish, you know, the spot. What I want to say again is I just need to remind men that the era of shotgun wedding is over. Ain't nobody gonna let you. I mean, maybe there's some instances where we may demand that you go to the altar, you know, but only to confess your sins and not to exacerbate an already problematic situation, right? We're not forcing anybody to get married but at the end of a shotgun anymore. I think it's important for men to know that you don't have to get married. And even if you have a child, you don't have to marry the mother of the child. Did you know that you could construct a very, very healthy dynamic with yourself, the father of the child, the mother of the child, and the family members, the other extended family? That's why with the caller, I entertained him because he called.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was making sense, you know, mm-hmm. and he made some good points. Counseling is so very important for people to sit down. We've been perpetuating these ideas that you just fall in love and you know it's right, and then everything is work out. And people were perpetuating that idea about sex and consent as well, that you don't ask to have sex. You just know when it's the right time. That's madness. That's madness. And so I say to men all the time, the best way to protect yourself from false claims of rape is to keep your tools to yourself. That's a foolproof way. Mm. You want to be safe? Don't have sex with anybody. And then you'll never be
and
accused.
Know that you don't own anyone. You don't own anyone. It doesn't matter if you're in a relationship. It doesn't matter if you get married. You know, vows are great. None of those vows say, I give up all of my rights to make decisions for myself and about my body and what I do with my body. No vow says that.
Uh-huh.
And we need legal protections to be able to realize and access our rights and use them. But at the same time, when the law changes, as with any law that's in place, no one is going to be forced to use the law.
Right. That's the next
thing. So if you feel like this does not apply to your marriage, then don't use it.
All right. Producer, I know I pressed the drop buttons, but we can take these two callers before the end of the show. So here's what I wanted to say. I've always offered a sort of a compromise, right? Put a compromise on the table. Why not have two laws? I see, and I'm going to just highlight Cedric Moss is using the language indecent sexual assault, I think, to replace rape. I realize a lot of people don't want to use the word rape because rape signifies the end of a marriage. It's like we actually understand the weight of rape, right? We mm-hmm. understand what it is, you know, but there's a little cognitive dissonance because if you say rape, there can no longer be a marriage. We understand the weight of the act. I think a lot of people are trying to figure out how to preserve the marriage after an act like this, and they feel calling it marital rape will make it impossible to preserve the marriage. Right.
And those people are lost and they're dangerous people because they would rather protect marriage than protect a person.
Yeah. That's heavy. And it's mm-hmm. I think it's true. I think we have to put people over principles all the time. That it's more important to preserve life than to preserve principle, right? But then that gets convoluted. Okay, Miss Wallace, we got two calls. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. Good morning, caller. Man, caller, you was right there. Producer, let's go to the second call. Sorry, we lost you, caller. Yep. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Yes, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How you do?
All right, and good morning to you again. You know, sometimes we make things so complicated in this country, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We put problems on top of problems. I mean, the situation with man raping his wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's an easy fix, you know. Very, very easy.
Mm-hmm.
But we're making it so complicated. All right? All we have to do, right? Because if a man, if a woman going to holler rape from her husband, that means either two things. Either they separated or they have no interest in each other. For a woman to holler rape, that means the relationship is dead. So all we have to do, the only law we need to fix right now is put in place where you can get divorced in one day. That's all. And then we can figure out how we can do the if we accumulate anything in the marriage, then we can they can go to court and see how they can work that one. But all you have to do is go to court and get divorced in one day. And that'll solve this whole problem. So if the man go and try and rape the woman, then he'd be charged for rape. Because, I mean, the marriage already dead. So why we have this prolonged going to court trying to fix this, then the man will go and rape the woman and this and that.
Listen, I don't know why the judiciary is in the state it's in, you know.
Just go to court and one day. Like in the States, just go and get divorced in one day.
Okay, thank you.
So that's great to be able to divorce and be done with the relationship, but that's not justice for some people. Some people would like to see justice served because of crimes because they've been violated sexually.
I mean, like, if you're going to have an anger to say your husband raped you in a relationship.
Hold on, pause right there. Hold on, wait, pause. Call her, pause right there. Just for a second. Just right there for a second. What do you mean if you're going to have an anger in a relationship because he was raped? I just find that that's justified. I could be angry. I could be angry if you try to force, if I say no and you try to force me. And see, here's the thing that I think most people don't realize is this. Women and men, we are like we fallible, like we still growing, we still uncertain about some things. And in the suggestion is that when a woman looks at a husband and says, hey, I don't feel so. Right, that maybe she feels like there's something wrong with her body and she's not quite sure what it is. She can't articulate that. Maybe she's grown up in a household where women never talk to men about their bodies. They just always make their bodies available to men, right? Like maybe she grew up that. But what if it is that a woman is not feeling well, right? And doesn't know what's happening and is too afraid to go to the doctor to talk about her sexual self, because she's also been raised in a family that suggested if you feel there's something wrong with your body, there's something wrong with your body, and you caused it, right? You're just sexual deviants. Is people in the Bahamas living like that? It could just be that she doesn't know how to tell her husband, I'm not withdrawing or withholding sex from you. I feel a deep shame about an inability to understand my body and what's going on with it. And once I sink into that place of deep shame, right, feeling like I'm not enough even myself, the last thing I want to do is be sexual and please my husband. And how that feeling could perpetuate, right? We also hear women talking about not knowing how to say to their partners, the technique that you use is just abusive. And it doesn't feel good. Or I'm not certain if there's something wrong with body, but I'm just too ashamed or frightened or, you know, lack confidence to talk about it with myself, let alone with you. I haven't even talked to a doctor about it yet. And in that space, what develops with a husband that doesn't take time and pause to say, hey, baby, this is the third time you told me no. Are you okay? Is your body okay? Is there something happening with you? And then how do we create a space for a woman to process that? Or for a couple to like all of these things. But the first thing men seem to go to is she withholding sex, she having sex with somebody else, huh? I should be able to, sweetheart. Like that's the first thing you all run to. At this point, I prefer in the way them who run to a sex worker. As opposed to say, oh, this woman don't love me. There's a lot of men say, look, I don't know what's going on, but I have some needs. I'm going to have to take care of them. I hope I could hold a space for her. I can take care of my needs. And then hopefully those men come back and say, hey, baby, what's happening with you? But, yeah, thank you, producer. Play that music, because I ain't even married and I was all up in that.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. Caller, thank you for calling. Thank you for sharing the space. And thank you for raising an interesting and excellent point, right? We got to listen to each other. That's the point of the marriage. That's when you talk about for better or worse. That's the space that you go into for better or worse. not she having sex with me, so I have to take it, and that's the waste, and she have to stay. Ms. Wallace, thank you. When will you join us again?
Thank you. Whenever you call.
All right. I am going to call you soon so we could continue this conversation. Tomorrow, we're going to grade the PLP 1 year in. Plenty to talk about. Hurricane prep. Return on investment. That's what I want to talk about. Are we seeing a sufficient return on our investment? And we're going to continue talking about this marital rape discussion, hurricane prep. You've been on the clock with Aaron Green, Mark Palmer, and Ms. Alicia Wallace from Equality Bahamas and the Strike 5 campaign. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio with Cecil Newry is up next.
Deadly winds, torrential rain. Hurricane a-coming, you better batten down. Hurricane a-coming.